Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope you're feeling adventurous. We're going on an adventure, a little expedition. The title of my talk is Flat Mountain Temple Sits on the Top of Mount Sumeru. So we're going to visit a very famous mountain. Mountains are breathtaking, aren't they? Especially when you live in Florida. It's so strange. We have Mount Trashmore and that is it. But mountains can also take your breath away. And I know as a flatlander, I feel that whenever I go to some place like Colorado and try hiking at any altitude over 5,000, I'm like, So I really appreciate and love mountains, but I'm very much aware of how much my body has adjusted to this flat state in which we live. So mountains are something physical that we deal with. We also have emotional mountains, challenging mountains of stuff that just won't go away, don't we? Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's interpersonal, sometimes it's physical or mental, sometimes it's spiritual. And yesterday it was my car. I faced a mountain of anger and frustration that really surprised me when my dear little car just went in for an oil change and ended up with a very expensive repair. And I kept running into lots of frustration, trying to get information about the car and when it was going to be ready and all the things that I had hoped to do yesterday did not happen because of this unexpected mountain. In the Zendo, we practice sitting like a mountain, don't we? I see most of you are sitting very straight and tall and still, and that is a wonderful thing. But it's often here in the Zendo that we find our most challenging heights or perhaps depths to traverse. And often the path feels very narrow and steep, rocky and slippery. One of the mountains that has intrigued me, which I never really knew much about, was the one that is frequently mentioned in the Buddhist teaching, a place called Mount Sumeru. Now, you can't find Mount Sumeru on the map because its real name is Mount Meru, M-E-R-U. The prefix S-U is added because it is considered a glorious mountain, a wonderful mountain, an excellent mountain. This Mount Meru was very often featured in Hindu, Jain, and Buddhist cosmology, and it was considered the center of all physical and spiritual universes. The peak itself, Meru, lies deep in the Himalayan mountains in the northeast corner of India. The name Meru likely came from the Sanskrit word jagged, because, or spine, because that's the way it looked. So it's this really tall, huge place. In Tibetan Buddhism, Mount Meru is a place which represents not only the center of the physical universe, but also the single-pointed mind that we work towards as we sit in meditation. Meru is thousands of miles in height, at least according to the Tibetans. And it's located somewhere beyond the physical plane of reality. So here we have another aspect of this very complex tradition. Some place that is a physical place, but more often a spiritual place. It is often considered the land of perfection and transcendence. It's where our early Buddhist came up with that term, pure land. It's said in mythology that Meru has its roots in hell and its summit in heaven. It's surrounded by seven rings of golden mountains, each separated from each other by seven oceans. On top, it has a golden palace, and the entire superstructure is flanked by all the continents of the world, each with two subcontinents. And there is a special gateway which came to be known as Shambhala. Maybe you heard of it. Shambhala is the gateway between the physical and the spiritual plane. On top of Mount Meru, in this golden palace, according to Tibetan mythology, this is where souls stay, people who have died, waiting for their final exit into nirvana. Many Western explorers in earlier times heard this tale of the Golden City, and they sought to find it. So they explored the Himalayas and other parts of Tibet, and this Shambhala became known as Shangri-La. So off we go to Mount Meru, and let's look at what our ancestor, Huineng, had to say about Mount Meru. The reason I bring this up is because, guess what? This has been my little companion for a few weeks, this Red Pine translation of the Platform Sutra. And it's because I like history, and I like geography, and I like mythology, and I really like a book like this because it helps me understand where our teachings, our Buddhist teachings, come from. The Platform Sutra is the only sutra that was not attributed to Buddha. It was attributed to the sixth patriarch, Huineng. It contains a biography of Huineng. It contains one of the first formulations of the three treasures and the precepts. It also has lots of sermons which attempt to persuade the listeners that the teachings of Chan are far superior to those of the Pure Land Buddhists, and that Huineng rightfully belongs in the great ancestral line from the Buddha. Some of you may have heard of Huineng, had read about him. He was a poor peasant who early in his youth heard a teaching from the Diamond Sutra. So that opened him in a way that drove him to try and find a teacher so he could learn more about this great teaching. He found Hung Jen, who recognized the potential of Huineng. But because he was poor and illiterate, he put him in the kitchen for a while, pounding rice. He wanted to test Huineng's resolve. Years passed, and Hung Jen realized that his time was passing, and he was looking for a successor, so he organized a poetry contest among his monks. Most of the monks were afraid to enter because they knew that the head monk, Shen Shui, would rightfully be the successor. So it was only Shen Shui that submitted a poem, and he wrote it on a wall in the Zendu. When Huineng passed by, and he couldn't read, so he had to ask somebody else to read it to him, he heard the poem and he thought, that's not quite right. So he thought about it, and he came up with another poem, and he asked someone to write it on the wall. When Hung Jen saw this, he realized that Huineng should be his successor. Even the monk Shen Shui realized this was a superior insight. So Huineng received transmission from Hung Jian, his robe and his bowl, but Hung Jian said, "You have to leave, because the other monks are going to be really mad that I gave transmission to you and not to Shen Shui." So Huineng escaped to the mountains, but Shen Shui was determined to get something out of this, and he chased after him. Huineng, when he finally realized that Shen Shui was following him, stopped and said, "Well, here's the bowl, here's the rope. Maybe you really should be the successor." And Shen Shui said, "No, I came to learn the Dharma from you." Huineng gave him transmission, then sent him back to the monastery and said, "You really should be the teacher there. I'm going to start my own place." So all of this is contained in the book, and it's really interesting if you want to read it. But there's one passage that I want to read to you. The sixth patriarch who was speaking to some lay people said, "I will take your eminence to the Western paradise right now, and you will witness it for yourself. Would your eminence like to see it?" Now again, the Western paradise was what they thought of as the Pure Land, the place they would all go after they died. The magistrate bowed respectfully and said, "If I could see it right now, why would I need to be reborn there? If the master would be compassionate enough to show us the Western paradise, that would be wonderful indeed." The master said, "I will show you all the Western paradise, and you won't leave here until you are free of doubt." The assembly was startled, and no one knew what was going to happen. The master said, "All of you should listen carefully. Everyone's physical body is a city. Your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin are the city gates. These five gates are on the outside, and on the inside is the gate of the intellect. Your mind is the kingdom, and your nature is the king. When your nature is there, so is the king. When your nature is gone, the king is gone too. When your nature is present, your body and mind are present. When your nature is absent, your body and mind cease to exist. When you're blind to your own nature, the Buddha is an ordinary being. And when you're aware of your own nature, an ordinary being is a Buddha. Compassion and kindness are Avalokiteshvara. Joy and detachment are Mahasthama. Power and purity are Shakyamuni. Impartiality and directness are Maitreya. The self is Mount Sumeru, and the deluded mind is the ocean. Afflictions are its waves, poisonous thoughts are its malevolent dragons, and passions are its denizens of the deep. Delusions are its ghosts, the three poisons are its hells. Ignorance is the realm of the beasts, and the 10 good deeds are the heavens. But when there is no self, Mount Sumeru crumbles. When you get rid of delusions, the sea dries up. When afflictions are gone, the waves cease. When poisonous thoughts end, the denizens of the deep vanish. When the Tathagata of your enlightened nature shines the light of wisdom on the land of your mind, the six gates shine with purity. The realms of the six desires become transparent. The three poisons disappear. All hells vanish. Inside and outside are perfectly clear and no different from the Western paradise. Unless you practice like this, how are you going to get there? When the audience heard this, the sound of their praises reached the sky, as those who were deluded suddenly saw clearly. The magistrate then bowed respectfully and said, "How wonderful, how absolutely wonderful. May all beings throughout the Dharma realm be enlightened upon hearing this." And that was rather long, and perhaps a bit tedious to listen to, because it's expressed in a language that we Zen people are not necessarily used to. But Hui Neng had one main teaching here, which was expressed in that passage I just read. Know your mind and see your nature. It was his motto. It can be spoken with a single breath, almost like a mantra. Know your mind and see your nature. Red Pine has beautiful commentary on this whole sutra, and again, I recommend it. When Hui Neng uses the word mind, he uses it with two senses. Sometimes it's the mind of discrimination that has the eight kinds of consciousness, and sometimes it's the true mind, the mind of awareness. When he uses this in this sense, he also often pairs it with the word nature. Now, this is somewhat similar to what scientists talk about when they refer to the particle and wave theory. I'm not going to give a science lesson, but just a brief thing that, you know, if the smallest part of matter, if you call it a particle or you call it a wave, they can't prove that it's one thing or another. It depends on your perspective. So Hui Neng is talking about pay attention to your perspective, know your mind and see your nature, but also think about where you're looking from. Our mind is the body, our nature is the function. In fact, the Chinese character or kanji for nature shows the mind giving birth. Thus, our mind is the source of all things, all dharmas, all thoughts. Our nature is the mind of action. While our mind is who we really are, our real body, our real body is lost. Our real body is on the page that I didn't print. But while the mind is who we really are, our real body is that which is, we might call the relative world. When we know who we really are and we see what we really do, we are finally able to taste the tea. So Red Pine is helping us understand that Hui Neng is reminding us that we kind of walk in both worlds, the relative and the absolute. Our mind encompasses everything. Our body responds to what our mind contains. So I encountered Mount Sumeru again when I was looking through the Book of Equanimity. Now, you must think I sit at home and just browse Zen books all day, which is not true. But there's a really interesting koan that mentions Mount Sumeru. It's number 19. Uman's Mount Sumeru. I always admire, this is the preface, I always admire the novel activity of Uman. All his life he pulled out nails and wedges for people. Why did he sometimes open his gate and set out a tray of glue or dig a pitfall in the middle of the road? Try to examine it and see. And here's the main case. Attention! A monk asked Uman, when not producing a single thought, is there any fault or not? Uman replied, Mount Sumeru. And here's the closing verse. Not raising a single thought, Mount Sumeru. Uman's Dharma giving is not meant to be stingy. Come to accept it, you'll get a double handful. Go doubt it, you'll never scale that 1,000-yard height. Blue oceans vast, white clouds cease. Between them, there's not a hair's breadth. A false cock's crow never deceives anyone. Be unsure and you'll not pass through that barrier. This is a rather strange koan, I think. There's kind of two ways that at least I looked at it. When not producing a single thought, is there any fault or not? This was the monk. Uman said, Mount Sumeru. At first, I thought about this monk, and I thought, man, he's wasting his teacher's time. What a question to ask. He should be busy meditating. Is this a trick question? Or perhaps he's really insecure, and he's not sure what he's doing, so he's asking his teacher for reassurance. Questioning our understanding, needing clarification, are authentic reasons to seek out a teacher. But how is it when you have no questions? Do you just make stuff up? I kind of felt maybe that monk was making stuff up. Or can you accept that you're just deep into meditation, into a space of equanimity, without resorting to the need to talk about it? When you are taught on top of the mountain with Kensho or in the depths of samadhi during meditation, very often we are speechless. And remember, one of the points that the Tibetans taught about Mount Sumeru is that it was either a symbol for this wonderful place where we would be in nirvana, or it was when we reached that single-pointed place of meditation. And when you're there, things drop away. Words cannot articulate. So if your teacher's not around, if you do experience doubt, or you do experience wonderful joy, can you just be with it and accept it? If you're worried, do you have skillful means or upaya that you use for your own self-care? Can you practice patience and wait for your inner wisdom to arise and help you figure out this deep question? Or can you, to quote Huineng, simply know your mind and see your nature? Well, once we catch the nirvana bug, we often put tons of effort into reaching it, just as the early Buddhists worried about finding that place called the Pure Land, and they spent lots of time chanting to Amitabha Buddha. Listen to this story, which you have heard before, and see if it rings a bell. To polish a tile. Here is a kind of koan for you. Basso was a famous Zen master called the Horse Master. He was a disciple of Nangaku, who was one of the six patriarch's disciples. So probably Nangaku was one that had a hand in creating the Platform Sutra. One day while he was studying under Nangaku, Basso was sitting practicing Zazen. Here was a man of large physical build. When he talked, his tongue reached to his nose. His voice was loud. His zazen must have been very good. Nangaku saw him sitting like a great mountain or like a frog. Nangaku asked, "What are you doing?"
"I'm practicing zazen," Basso replied.
"Why are you practicing zazen?"
"I want to attain enlightenment. I want to be a Buddha."
The disciple said, "Do you know what the teacher did? He picked up a tile and he started to polish it. In Japan, after taking a tile from the kiln, we polish it to give it a beautiful finish. So Nangaku picked up the tile and started to polish it." Basso, his disciple, asked, "What are you doing?"
"I want to make this tile into a jewel," Nangaku said. "Well, how is it possible to make a tile into a jewel?" Basso asked.
"How is it possible to become a Buddha by practicing zazen?" Nangaku replied. "Do you want to attain Buddhahood? There is no Buddhahood beside your ordinary mind. When the cart does not go, do you whip the cart or the horse?" Now, we could talk about carts and horses, and, you know, there's many different aspects to this little story, but this koan reminded me of the deep connection between practice and Buddhahood and connection of sorts between effort and achievement. But sometimes we get stuck in endless activity and we forget we are already a Buddha. If you have read Dr. Frank's most recent book on Hakuin Sang in Praise of Zazen, he will show you very clearly how Hakuin's assertion that from the beginning we're already Buddha is really true. This very body is the body of Buddha. In the Platform Sutra, people first learned or saw a clear articulation of the three treasures that we revere: the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And in traditional Buddhism, these concepts are expressed as three baskets: the Buddhakaya, which is the ground of being, the Dharmakaya, the truth and the teachings, and the Sambhogakaya, the body of transformation. Realizing the three treasures is realizing that these treasures or baskets are not outside of us. This very body is where we find the ground of being. This is where we discover what is true, and this is where transformation takes place. Now that's pretty incredible. Nowhere to go, nowhere to be, except right here. Another great spiritual teacher once said, "I am the way, the truth, and the light." The Buddha taught, "I am the three bodies of realization. I am Mount Sumeru." Just in our beingness, just in our I am-ness, we are the Buddha. We are Mount Sumeru, and we are the center of the universe. And I think that even scientists today will tell us that every point in the universe is the center of the universe. So go figure that one out. Maizumi Roshi often told his students, "Have good trust in yourself, not in the one you think you should be, but in the one you are, Mount Sumeru." Our friend Roger Sheikhan Hawkins really recently posted this comment: "Life is just our life, and it all passes away. That it all passes away is its emptiness. That we can ask, is that all there is, can reveal or lay bare awareness that doesn't come or go. This is our life's fullness, and we eventually realized this is enough. So in conclusion, I would like to just remind us, we don't have to have the faith of the Pure Land Buddhist. We don't have to trust in Amitabha Buddha, although there's nothing wrong with that. This is what Huineng's followers learned, but we can use our ordinary minds to discover our true nature for ourselves. And know, as Dogen taught, that practice and enlightenment are the same thing. So today, I encourage you to sit like a mountain, explore your personal version of Mount Sumeru, break the tile of your small self, and realize the ground of your being, the shining mirror of awareness. Thank you very much.
Thank you.